explodes.
What was your mindset when you stepped in the batter's box?
Go yard. I mean, I'm a pitcher. Why not swing as hard as I can?
He was so worked up, he vomited on the sideline and then just kept on yelling at his teammates, Steve.
If becoming a sideline reporter for ESPN didn't make me popular, this thing did. I've been getting offers for it all day long.
That might be the best sideline report in the history of sideline reports.
Welcome into another edition of Sideline Pass Podcast. Molly McGrath here with Chris Budden as we get ready for Thanksgiving week. It's rivalry week. It's feast week. There's a lot going on in college sports and in sports in general, but we're just going to quickly touch upon something that happened last week. We're not going to get into specifics or name names because, frankly, that doesn't matter. It's more about the fact that the sideline reporter role was questioned at times last week with a certain situation. And so we just want to talk about it because I will defend this role and its importance to a broadcast till the day I die. This is our livelihood. This really matters. We're very passionate about it. And all of the people within the industry who work on game broadcasts, which not a lot of people work on game broadcasts and know the what exactly goes into that. But people who work on game broadcasts know that a sideline reporter is invaluable. The eyes and ears, the person on the field, the person to get sensitive information. And we also have very close relationships with the coaches who trust us with things that, they trust us with sensitive information that we don't always reveal to the public. So Chris, I want to take this situation as like a learning opportunity for us, for young reporters. I think the people who listen to this podcast are young reporters or people who want to be in the industry. So we don't need to tell them the importance of a sideline reporter because they're listening to this because they believe that it's important because they value our voices. What's your take and your takeaway from this? And we can get into specifics on like half times and things like that as well.
Yeah, I think my takeaway was it's frustrating because I feel like a lot of times we are justifying our jobs to a certain portion of the fan base. And that portion of the fan base is not listening to this podcast. So we don't need to defend it on here because if you're listening to us too, and you have for a while, then you are probably a reporter or expect a role. But the automatic replies that came after it of, well, you're just there for eye candy and you're just there to, look pretty or regurgitate information. It was like, now it's let's start over defending our roles again. And that's annoying. Because anyone that works with us understands the value of our role on air or off air. And I don't think that that was the purpose of what of why that topic was brought up. But it's just how a certain subset of viewers view this role. And it's frustrating and it's always been frustrating. And so to have to continue to defend it, I will say like, it was, while there was a lot of bad, there was a lot of good. Like I had medical personnel and PR people come up to me and complete strangers of saying, we just want you to know that we love your work and we value your work. And so, but listen, like I deleted X or Twitter off my phone during the game because I just didn't feel like dealing with all of that. And it was actually very healthy and very, we talked about social media on here last week. But it's just, we take our jobs very seriously, and whether it's a sideline reporter role, the analyst role, the play-by-play role, we are in meetings with coaches throughout the week. And a lot of those things those coaches say are not for broadcast purposes. They're to understand the team, to understand them. And if they feel at all that our trust has been broken, that's very problematic, not just for a reporter role, not just for a halftime interview. For our knowledge of the team and the background of the team and the relationship with the coach going forward, because those are things once they're broken, you can't get back. And knowing the mindset of a coach and knowing his personality and knowing them the way that we do helps us learn how to interview, helps us learn how to prepare, helps us, we can get into it later, but like I had a great report about Mac Brown, and it's because I knew him so well. I knew his feelings towards analytics. I knew certain things about him that when I go to interview him, it's given me a sense of, you know, how to tee him up, you know, what is emotional to him, what, where he wants to go with an interview. And once you break that trust, you don't get it back.
That's so true. Yeah. Let's talk about trust because it's the foundation of our jobs. It's the most important part of what we do is establishing trust with coaches and players. And, you know, after doing this in college football for 10 years, like I have extreme trust with certain coaches who will tell me things that they won't tell our broadcast crew. Coaches will tell me things that they won't tell our play-by-player analysts. They'll come up to me and say, hey, this is off the record, but just so you know, this is just an example. This isn't a real example, but they'll say, hey, just so you know, that player is playing with a broken hand. So be kind to him, or like, just so you know, you're going to see some things. This guy's playing with a broken hand. This guy has a broken foot, and this guy had a secret tightrope surgery. Like, these are the kinds of things that we know about that we don't tell anyone, that we're maybe even at times told, like, this is off the record. You can tell your play-by-play and analyst after the fact. I don't want anyone to know this. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Like, I will go back to a moment with, and I've had a couple moments like that this season that I found out about broken bones that no one in a fan base knows about. All right.
Well, family
and
drama. Because this has happened before. Like, this kid's parents are currently going through a divorce. This is why he's playing like this. So if you could, we don't want you, you know, so there's a level of protection during the week of like, he's going through this, or parents are going through this, or there's a family emergency back home. That's yeah. why he's unavailable to you. Well, that's not, you know, necessarily for us to report, but it's us to understand how to go about our jobs in a certain way.
Context is everything. You need to know that background information in order to understand the team that you're covering and the person that you're interviewing. And I've told this story on this podcast before, but I thought about it a lot this week. Before a Georgia game, it was, I think in 2021, it was the year they won the championship. But before the Georgia game, you know, it was either JT Daniels or Stetson Bennett. No one knew who was starting. And only people within the program knew who was starting, but no one, broadcasters, game day was calling us saying, who's starting in this game? No one knew. And right before the game, I went up to Kirby Smart and I said, Coach, they're relying on me to get this information. I need to know who your starting quarterback is. And I want you to know that this is off the record until kickoff. I won't let anyone know. And I need you to trust me. And he looked me dead in the eye and he said, why should I trust you? And I said, because my career will not survive if you don't. And he was like, wow, okay. Well, JT Daniels is starting. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you. You know, like, trust is paramount. It is everything in our profession. So,
which actually, like, sometimes puts us in really awkward situations because game day wants information, SEC Nation, like, we have all these other avenues that want information, and we have different jobs than Pete Thamel has, or Heather Dinich has, or Adam Rittenberg has. And the ability for a coach to trust us to know that we're also not going to go to other people within our organization and say, here's who's starting, because they don't want it on game day. They want it right before kickoff. It's a unique position that the sideline reporters are in, of having knowledge, but also not sharing sometimes that knowledge with other people that we work at, because that would be on the bottom line of game day or breaking news or wherever.
Right. Yeah. It's a tricky balance. And sometimes, like, Reese Davis needs to know for his context, and he's amazing. I trust him when he's like, hey, is this guy healthy? This is off the record, but for my own context, so that I don't pump him up and talk about him too much, like that kind of thing. So yeah. Reese does a really good job of balancing it, but it's true. Like, if a coach says to me, this is off the record and you can't tell anyone, guess what? I'm not telling anyone. There have been times where we haven't even made graphics in our truck because we don't want, like, other people to be able to see it, or, like, over the line to be able to see the kind of breaking news or information that we have. So anyway, all that is to say is trust is paramount. Let's talk about a second part of this. Okay. Let's talk about halftime interviews, because halftime interviews are a cluster. They are at times stressful. They are hectic. There are times where the coach comes out of the locker room and then just spews a bunch of coach speak at you. And I kind of had a situation like that this week where, And you know, it's a week where you're like, all right, like, I need to get a good halftime report because I don't want it to suck, because now the spotlight's on sideline reporters in that situation. I think in order to deal with a halftime report situation where the coach gives you no information. You go into the week knowing that, you go into the game with extra information, maybe a different kind of story that you might tell at halftime after that. Like an example, hey, the offensive coordinator told us during the week that they're going to change the game plan and pare things down because they wanted their quarterback to be more comfortable. Like coach acknowledged at halftime that their quarterback did look more comfortable and this pared down, like it did work. Like you can add stuff to the week to the report to give it a little more beef and a little more life and more context. But I think the halftime regurgitation of what the coach just told you is difficult, especially for young reporters.
How many times have you actually not gotten a coach?
It's very rare. Jim Harbaugh probably doesn't always do halftime.
Yeah, but you know that going in. I'm saying like it's very
true.
Rare
yeah, with
to
Jim
not
Harbaugh,
get
you know.
Any kind of information from a coach that you can't use, especially when you're getting two of them. You know, the ability to even just get one. And then sometimes like if it's boring stuff, then it's boring stuff that's what it is. And you beef it up with stats and things that they keys of what they wanted going in. But
or
it's very rare
you don't do the report.
Off. Yeah. You
yeah.
Just don't
or
do
you don't. So the way that I always tell young reporters, it is quality over quantity. It does not matter how much you get on the air. You do not need to have a report just to say you have a report. If the report sucks and the coach gave you nothing, which I've had before, I have told my producer, hey, the report sucks. Or, hey, he was talking about how great the quarterback was playing and the quarterback just threw a pick. Like this no longer applies. So I'm going to kill it. And now I'm going to go to the bench area and I'm going to hustle and listen and try to find more information for a report so that I have something to add because what I got from halftime was not usable.
There are many times now that we're doing these quarter interviews between first and second and third that the interview stinks or the interview doesn't apply because you're in a fourth down situation or you're in a red zone and you want to hold it till after they score and then it completely doesn't apply because maybe they're talking about defense. Then we just don't hear it. And it's not like someone sitting there back home being like, where's the sideline reporter with that quarter interview? You just don't air it. I will say like, it's hard. It was very hard for me at first when you and I both started at Fox at NFL of to think I had all this information and I'm here to do a job and I would count the number of hits that I would be on. And I remember like my mentor when we first got to Fox was Pam Oliver and she was wonderful with me. And she goes, you can't sit there and think about all the stories that you have that get left on the cutting room floor because all of that also just goes into the knowledge of the team and the prep. Is it frustrating that sometimes you might have great stuff that never gets in? Yes. It's just the nature of the job. But if you go in there thinking, I got to prove my worth, I have to be on, you know, two times this quarter and one time this quarter, then this isn't the job for you because that's not what it's about. Your return on investment isn't about the number of times you get on air. So much of our job is getting a shot of something. An example of this that I was really proud of this past week, and I told you, is their Mac Brown's team's down 11, score a touchdown after the touchdown, down 11. They're deciding to go for two. And our booth is going, what are you doing? Why? Bob is so like the numbers game. He's like, I hate this decision to go for two because now if you miss it, you have to go for two the next time. And knowing Mac the way that I do, I knew he was very into analytics. I happened to be standing 3 feet from him when they make the decision to go for two. And then they call a timeout to discuss, okay, should we go for this? Do we like the play call here? And then he goes back to his analytics guy. And I can see two guys with the binder. And you can see there's red portions, yellow portions, green portions. So, A, my producer trusted me enough in that moment to do the report there because that's kind of an odd moment to try and fit in a reporter unless it's very pertinent to the situation. But I was also able to say, long sleeve, light blue shirt, blue hat, background's walking to him 25-yard line, far left side. And my camera got, like our director got a camera on it. And we're a crew that doesn't have a ton of cameras. So the ability to get that, like that report doesn't mean half as much if we don't have the camera watching Mac go through the binder, looking at the binder with him. And so for as much as it like, do I want my voice on there? Yeah, I did the work. Do I want to be on camera? Sure. It's nice to have, you know, be able to have some sort of FaceTime and be able to put your work on air. But so much about the job also is getting that camera shot. That in a crew like mine that doesn't have, you know, 30 cameras, you don't get that shot unless I'm telling them where it is and what to do.
That's an amazing example. And that's so cool that you got to see that. And then you're kind of narrating it in real time as you're seeing it happen, which takes trust from your producer. If you work with a producer who doesn't trust you, you are not getting on the air. And that, like, it takes time and chemistry and having done this job for a while for your producer to say, I'm coming to you right now. And you need to handle this situation in real time and tell us exactly what you're seeing and what you've heard. And they trust exactly what you see and what you hear. Let's talk about this week. Let's talk about our games and in ways that we were able to add value. I think one thing that was really interesting in our game is that we knew for a while off the record. So Miami's quarterback, Tyler Van Dyke, has been dealing with an excruciating leg injury for a large part of this season. And Miami fans are completely dumping on him and saying that his play is terrible and he should be benched. And this kid is going through a roller coaster and he's being publicly ridiculed, but he has a severely painful injury. It's and so we didn't talk about it for a couple weeks. And Mario Cristobal was like, hey, I'll tell you this, but like, I don't know if Tyler wants it out there. So we didn't talk about it on the air. And then I talked to Tyler this week and he was very open about it. He's like, yeah, I have this really rare injury. It's called a Morel Lavelle lesion. It's where the skin separates from the fat and muscle layer in my leg. And I did research on a Morel Lavelle lesion. It's most commonly seen in high impact situations like car accidents. 25% of people who have this very rare injury have been in a severe car crash. So basically he has a leg that's like been in a car crash. It causes extreme pain and extreme swelling. And he's playing through that. No wonder why his production is down. And so I'm watching him on the sideline and I'm observing that he's playing through a good amount of pain and he's hobbled and he's getting hit a lot. And he's gutting through this injury. And because he essentially gave us permission to talk about it, was very open with me about the injury and everything that it entailed, I mentioned it on the air kind of as a way to say, hey, everyone's wondering why Tyler Van Dyke has been playing poorly. Here's the reason why. This is the most important information for Miami fans to know at this point is the injury to their quarterback and the fact that I can see visibly that it's still affecting him. So I thought that that was really good that our crew was able to cover that and talk about that. But I will talk to you about one thing that was very frustrating, Chris. This would have killed you. My interview with Jeff Brohm that went viral with the Gatorade bath that everyone saw. So Louisville wins against Miami. They clinch a spot in the ACC championship game for the first time in school history. Jeff Brohm is an alum of Louisville. It's the team that he played for, his hometown team. He came back to bring them to dominance. It's an emotional moment for him and his family. Most of his family is on the staff. And we had an emotional moment and we're waiting for them to come to us. And they say, Molly, so sorry, but we're not able to get this on the air. We have to go. They need to go to the next game. Studio needs to take it. So they're counting down in my ear. I'm waiting with him. They're counting down in my ear. 10, 9, and then dump Gatorade all over us. In as they're counting down to me that they're going off the air. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if they had come to us live, I would have started the interview. We would have had Gatorade dumped on us. And it would have been on live television and it would have been a very real emotional raw moment. And the fact that we didn't go to that interview is a huge missed opportunity. And I reached out to our bosses and people in integration within our company. And I said, hey, this happens. I know it's a priority to get to the next game, especially if our game goes long, but just so you know, this was a missed opportunity. This was a special moment that we missed. Because then I had to wait for them to count us off the air and then they needed to stop down for a second. And then we had to do the interview to tape and the moment was gone. Mm-hmm. So that was a situation that was a bummer, but, it can't be helped. It is what it is, you know, live and learn, move on.
It's frustrating. I know that like what I've always been told in terms of staying for an interview is you want to finish the story. And like, to me, that was a finishing of the story. First ACC champion, like appearance in a championship game, from a first year head coach, from an alum, like that's finishing the story. I don't know what was on after you guys, but yeah, that's frustrating. But at least, hey, we all saw the Gatorade bath anyways.
Everyone, it was the Gatorade bath scene around the sports world. And everyone's like, oh my God, what a cool moment to be a part of. And I'm like, it wasn't on TV. That's the sucky part. It was like on a really wide shot. But if we had gone to the interview, it would have been what the interview was about. It would have been really cool.
If you had saw it coming, just for the future, since I know you've never covered Major League Baseball, like Gatorade baths, not as often in college football games, very often in Major League Baseball, and you had to get on a flight right afterwards, I would always, if I had to get on a flight, if it was what we call a getaway day, always brought a change of clothes, because you know what's the worst? Flying back home smelling like Gatorade.
Oh my gosh. So it's true. Gatorade baths are not that common in college football. Like once you get towards championship games and conference championships, like it happens sometimes, but I've been doused with water before. We've had like a water bath, like a team got the water bucket and dumped it on us, but I haven't had a full on Gatorade bath in a while. It hit me on the side of my head and my face. So my hair was soaked. I had Gatorade in my ear. It was all over my entire outfit. My shoes were squeaking. Like my shoes were soaked. And then it was a getaway straight to the airport to catch a cross country flight from Miami to Seattle, which is a 6.5+ hour flight. And so I get to the airport and I immediately wash my arms because I was wearing a sleeveless shirt. I wash my arms up to my shoulder with hand soap. And then I dry off, go into a stall, change into like Lululemon pants and a big t-shirt and different shoes. I luckily had different shoes with me, but my hair was still soaked. My legs were sticky. I wasn't going to like wash my legs in a sink. That's so weird. Like all of me was just sticky. And then I went on a 6.5 hour flight. And so from that moment, I hadn't showered. I was still covered in Gatorade about 8-9 hours later. So that was interesting. Yeah.
Well, we had to make this one a short one because it is Thanksgiving week, but we did want to put out a podcast this week after everything that's happened. And for everyone that, like, I know a bunch of young reporters listen to this. Again, if you ever have any questions that we could answer on here on how to do reports, how to get in, anything about the role, our DMs are always open. You are going, you have good old fashioned hate this weekend.
I have Georgia at Georgia Tech. Yeah. So it'll be fun to see, Georgia ahead of the postseason, to see Brock Bowers and his health and how he's doing. Carson Beck has really rounded into form, and this Georgia Tech team is feisty. So I think it'll be a lot of fun. Where are you headed?
I have Texas A&M LSU, which I did 4 years ago, 5 years ago, which was the 7-overtime game when I was 6 months pregnant with Landon. Nice. That led to the rule change. And I'm also in studio this week doing wraps, halftime stuff, 30-minute fills in between games for Feast Week. So that'll be fun. I've never done that before, but it uses a different muscle to do the studio stuff. So I'm excited.
You are such a star. You're going to be amazing. I can't wait to watch you. And it's awesome. It's also a great sacrifice for you to be away from your family this week. I know that that's difficult, but hey, we love our jobs and and we spend a lot of time away from our children because we feel that what we do is valuable and we love to do it. So thank you to everyone who's listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for the people who realize the importance of the job, have defended the job, and everything that it takes. We appreciate you. We see you, and we'll be back next week with some more stories. Have a happy Thanksgiving.